Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts Boyd and Lucinda for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is May 26th, 2010. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And as always, our topic is The Streets Don't Love You Back. Tonight we have a great show for you. Our guest is Wafiq Sabir, PhD. He's an author, a scholar. He's been in the law enforcement for 23 years. He's also a gang intervention officer. So we will talk with him tonight about all the things that he does. And let me introduce my co-host, Boyd, to the show.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. I just want to give everybody one update today. Today is a great day. My book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, was inducted into my hometown Afro-American History Museum. And that's been a great feeling right there to have my work introduced into the museum where my work could be talked about the rest of my life. And it's just a great feeling that my hometown recognized my work, and giving back to the youth and others is a great, great thing that I do. So I just want to thank God for that right there as well. And we want to turn the mic over to our guest tonight for him to formally introduce himself, and we'll get the ball rolling.
All right. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello. You're on.
Okay. Is it my turn now?
Yes.
It's your turn.
Okay. Good evening to everyone. I'm Dr. Wafiq Sabir, and I am calling and talking to you all from Fort Worth, Texas. And for those that are not too familiar with Texas, Fort Worth is about 30 miles just west of Dallas, Texas. So oftentimes people refer to the Metroplex as the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. I've been a police officer in the city of Fort Worth since 1986, and the last 18 years I've played a very instrumental part in the gang intervention prevention section. Our gang unit has about 37 police officers, and we're divided into many sections, but the section that I belong to is called Gang Intervention Prevention, and my primary duties are to provide information to the public regarding gangs, gang violence, which includes students, parents, teachers, administrators, other law enforcement officials, pretty much whoever kind of wants to know and have a discussion about how to better address the issues that our youth in particular have to face, then I get called and we have these discussions, and oftentimes we have training platforms to address these issues.
Right. And you go to all the different public schools or private schools, either one in your area, whoever needs you to come and talk?
Well, in the Fort Worth area, we have approximately 144 schools, elementary to high school, not including the county itself, so I'm just talking about the city. And I mm-hmm. would probably say that I've addressed faculty and students at all of our high schools, all of our middle schools, and probably about 95% of our elementary schools over the years. So my schedule is pretty tight, but I go where I'm invited. So
right. That
simply means when people typically have issues, then they want to discuss those issues. And up until that point, sometimes things are okay for them. So I like to go where I'm invited versus going someplace that perhaps is not going to be as open and receptive to the information.
Right. And we know right now that, you know, Texas being one of the border states, is having a lot of issues with gangs and drugs. How's that affecting the Fort Worth area?
Well, you know, the border, that whole topic is a very interesting topic to discuss, because there's a lot of biases, of course, that goes along with that. It really doesn't affect us, I don't think, as great as perhaps people may suggest. But, of course, with Texas bordering Mexico, you know, obviously there are going to be some issues. But for the most part, I don't really look at that as a major issue involving our gangs. Our street-level gang members, for the most part, are American-born. Many of them are from Mexico or other South American countries, but for the most part, the vast majority of those individuals that do come here to the United States are law-abiding citizens.
Right.
But, you know, you occasionally have those individuals who have ill intentions, and we address them just like you would address anyone else.
Right. I know I've heard some stories about down in El Paso with the Mexican mafia actually hiring people in the state to do hits on police officers.
Right.
Do you know very much about that? And
That's not really a issue that we have in our area. You primarily see those as issues with the bordering cities, where your police and your individuals that are very much either just crime or criminals from a street level standpoint or from a prison standpoint, oftentimes there's a lot of conflict there. We typically don't see that in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So, you know, El Paso obviously would be one of those areas, Brownwood, Texas, pretty much, the cities that border either Mexico or just border a different state like New Mexico and Oklahoma and some of the other surrounding areas.
Mm-hmm. So how, maybe you could explain a little bit about how the gang structure is in Fort Worth and what you're basically trying to educate the community about.
Sure. When I talk about gangs, primarily I address our criminal street gang element. Keep in mind, you know, you do have prison gangs, biker gangs, you have your hate groups. So you have different classifications of gangs, but what affects our communities are our criminal street gangs, and I break them down either by race, not so much by geographical regions or areas of town. And so you have your African-American gangs and your Hispanic gangs.
Right. And what do you find is the biggest problem or the biggest gang in your area that has, I guess, that's causing the biggest problem?
Yeah, you know, and it really kind of goes back and forth on a couple of different things, but the major issue, and I think this is probably around the United States, is drugs. Oftentimes it is a territory issue that, you know, that becomes problematic, but for the most part it's the sales and distribution of drugs, and that pretty much is what drives the vast majority of our African-American gangs.
Right. Okay, I'm going to turn the mic over to Boyd for a few minutes.
Yeah, I've just been listening and paying close attention. When you first got into the gang intervention part of it, and you say you've been a police officer since 86, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, when you first got into the gang part of it, as far as seeing how that problem had started getting out of control, what really led you to want to be an intervention to that situation with young youth?
I'm glad you asked that. That's a very interesting story, and I'll just kind of share the shortened version of that.
Yes.
The primary thing that I think that led me into the intervention aspect versus the gang enforcement or the gang suppression aspect of it was we would go out and execute a lot of warrants, put a lot of gang members in jail, which is typically what law enforcement does all across, you know, not only the United States but the world. Something happens, police show up and put someone in jail. And what we were finding that a lot of the gang violence that was occurring by way of our youth. And I say youth, pretty much young men under the age of 18. It wasn't a situation where we were seeing 25, 30, 35-year-old grown men, you know, involving themselves in a lot of gang activity. It was a younger population or younger generation of individuals. So primarily what started to develop was that as we were going out as a gang unit, as a team, we were going out executing warrants and placing people in jail, we started to realize that the individuals that we were going after were teenagers. They were children. And there came a point where we would show up, and I say we, myself and a couple of my partners, we would oftentimes get called, show up at a scene because we were pretty well known in the community, and we had a lot of contacts, and they would say, well, are you familiar with this kid? Do you know this particular family? And oftentimes we would show up at a crime scene and say, yeah, you know, we know this kid or we're familiar with this kid. And then a parent or a guardian or a family member would show up, and they would be, you know, of course, emotionally distraught, but they would want to know, well, you know, how is it that my child is in a gang? And we would kind of look at them, you know, with this strange look as if, well, how come you didn't know? If we knew as the police, how come you didn't know as a parent or as a family? And it got to a point where we just started to take a closer look at how we were addressing the gang violence and activities in our city. And so the notion came up that instead of us just constantly going out and addressing this issue from an enforcement or suppression standpoint, why don't we start to address the parents, the community leaders, the students themselves? We needed to take a different approach. So the approach became that of an intervention prevention approach. And so we right now we still have a nice balance of enforcement, and that's going to always continue. But the balance is that as a law enforcement agency, as you go out and you execute warrants and you put the bad guy, bad girl, I guess, in jail, you also provide additional information. And because what a lot of people understand is that every gang member, at least every gang member I've ever met, had a mom, dad, brother, sister, cousins, pastor from the church, you know, elementary school teacher, people who knew this person or very involved with this person, and oftentimes those individuals needed the information so we could perhaps, you know, decrease some of the levels of gang violence or just make people more aware of what was going on in the community and within their homes.
Right, and I have to agree with everything you just said because I'm an ex-gang member myself, you know. I joined the gang when I was 10 years old out of Detroit, Michigan in the 70s, you know. And back then we had Gang Squad in Detroit, you know, and the Big Four that used to pick us up and things like that and just take us down to the holding cell to mom or somebody came. And oftentimes parents, like you said, don't know what's happening with their child because they so quick to say, oh, little Johnny or little Susie is not doing this. Well, you can't just jump up and say what little Johnny and Susie ain't doing because you're had not took the time to even know what's going on in your own household, you know. Little Johnny and little Susie is down here in this gate because they out doing something they ain't got no business doing, and you at home not paying close attention to what's happening in your own household. So now here come the blame game, and you want to get mad at the police officer because little Johnny and Susie in handcuffs. But you wasn't paying close attention to your situation, you know. So I'm very proud that you even mentioned it like that. because that is how it goes. You know, we lock them up, but it's deeper than just lock up, throw the key away, because it's a lot of cats that's involved in gang life that is very smart and don't even really want to be in the gang life, but in the gang life because they feel they want to be a part of something. You know, if dad ain't in the house or mom on drugs and dad on drugs, you know, we're not taught at a very young age. Like I tell people all the time, when you taught right from wrong at a very young age, you can't wait till you're 16 trying to teach somebody right from wrong. You know, you got to start at a youngster because, you know, people start carrying guns at 7, 8 years old and joining gangs. So you can't wait till they're 16. This starts at home from the gate. So if little Johnny make a mistake, he know how to come back to what's right, you know? But if he don't know what's right, he don't know how to come back to what's right. So that's always what I tell these parents out here, you know? You have to be aware of what's happening in your own household. And when your child is arrested, you can't scream and say, oh, the police this, oh, the police that. Because you got to look in the mirror and ask yourself, why didn't I know what was going on?
Right.
So yeah, I got to give you big ups on that, brother. You know what I mean? For taking your time out to go that route with the youth. You know.
Well, you know, it's for me, it's a part of it is personal, other part is professional, because the vast majority of what I deal with and we deal with are people that look like me.
Right.
They're African American and Latino, and so from a personal standpoint, I have to, and I have these conversations oftentimes with young people. It just depends on who it is and where
and who's trying to really pay attention.
Right, and you know, and I let them know that when you look here in Texas, that 70% of our young people that are in prison that are incarcerated. African American, Hispanic. When you
Correct.
Look at the adult prison population, 75%, 7 out of every 10 are African American or Hispanic. And so I present it back to them and say, well, what's wrong with this picture?
Right.
And what is it that what's so attractive about prison that we can't wait to get there to check it out?
Exactly.
You know, I'm not writing these laws. I'm the one that's not putting you in jail. You know, you're the individual, you're the generation that has to change this. Otherwise, we just keep going round and round and round.
Right, and the gate keep opening and closing and opening and closing. You know.
Oh, most definitely.
And it's so often in time that a lot of and by you being in law enforcement, I'm gonna put this out there to you and see how you feel about this one here.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we have a mandatory law about the drug dealer, okay? If you get caught with X amount of drugs in certain states or whatever, that's automatically life. Like in the state of Michigan, you get caught with anything over 600 grams, which is a half a bird, you get natural life in the state of Michigan, okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay, we have another gentleman over here on our right-hand side that's raping our women and killing our kids and everything, you know, and he gets an outdate, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel that from living that standpoint that a man who sells drugs, we have to give him something to replace that selling drugs, and that's a job and some kind of, you know, stamina to do something more positive in his life than be slanging drugs, you know? But
yeah.
But the man on the right-hand side over here that's raping our kids and killing our women and abusing our women, that's the man that I don't feel that can be rehabilitated right away because he got a lot of issues more so than the drug dealer.
Right.
And that's where I think we have the system broke down in a lot of ways because the man who sells drugs is took away from his family for the rest of his life. And that don't fit that crime. You know, if you do wrong, okay, we pay for what we do wrong in. But the other guy, he really needs to sit down and relax his nerves in them gates a long time and get his life together if that's what he really, really trying to do because now he's back out hurting our women and kids again. What's your point of view on that?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you try to find fairness, you hope to find justice within the system, and I think, you know, most people, regardless of who you are, if you really take a close look at the criminal justice system, oftentimes it is a criminal injustice system. And the system itself, like any other system, is not perfect. But, you know, if I were to break that down on a different level, I look at it like this. You take someone from any community, I guess, and you find them with 5 grams of crack cocaine, and you take another man, and he has 500 grams of powder cocaine. Now, are both of those crimes the same? They're two totally different crimes, but the outcome becomes oftentimes the same. So, in other words, crack cocaine is supposed to be just as it's supposed to be as concentrated as 500 grams of powdered cocaine. So in other words, this person with 5 grams of crack cocaine, that crime is just as serious as someone with 500 grams of powder. Well, how do you put that on the scale? Well, it's an economic issue. Who's most likely to have 5 grams of crack cocaine? Someone who's African American and Latina.
Right.
Who's the person who's most likely to have 500 grams of powder cocaine? Probably not someone who's African American or Latina. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So in having that type of and understanding the principles that go along with all of that, then you have to say to yourself, where is there justice in that? We know that there's an imbalance with many of our laws and how they're addressed. And basically, what I like to do is stimulate thought within our young people to say, in that same scenario that I just discussed, I bring it up to them and say, well, where is the fairness in that? And they don't find any fairness in it. But my point is, that you're most likely, as a young African-American male, to get caught, if you're going to get involved in that lifestyle, you're most likely to get caught with 5 grams of crack cocaine than 500 grams of powder cocaine, which means that there's only a little bit of amount of substance that you need to get caught with before you receive perhaps a mandatory minimum of 10, 15 years.
Bottom line.
Right.
And you hit it right on the head. You getting 10 to 15 years mandatory, you feel me, off the top, and ain't killed nobody, you know? But here go the guy on the right-hand side, done raped our women, beat our kids, and abused everybody, and he gets a outdate of 3 or 4 years, and we're going to just send him to a clinic in domestic violence class and, Mr. So-and-so, he'll be great from that point, you know? And
yeah.
That's where the system is totally broke down, because the man that you done sent away for a mandatory 10 or 15 years is a man you could have put in a vocational school, you could have gave him a job, you could have set him down and gave him some direction, because, you know, like you know and I know, coming from the hood, you know, when they put the drugs in the ghetto and you can make $10,000 a week versus you finna, you know, go out here and starve, well, you're going to choose the 10 a week. You know what I mean? And at the same time, when you take drugs from a man, you got to replace something with that when you're telling him, look, don't feed your family, don't do this, you know. You got to replace something with that. And replacing that is giving that man an option to go to a vocational school, you know, give him a job, sit him down and show him what's happening, you know what I mean? But then if you give him 10 or 15 years in the joint, you done destroyed that man's life.
Sure. sure.
You know?
But, you know, the flip side to it, though, is that we all have free will.
Exactly.
We're not animals where we run off of, you know, just, you know, pure instinct. It's free will. And so the other side of that coin is that I didn't make that person into a drug dealer. I didn't make him go out and sell. I didn't make him go out and be a criminal or she. That person made a personal decision.
Choice.
The choice to go and pursue that lifestyle. And so because I understand that principle of free will, the concept, then my message to the youth is that if you choose that lifestyle, because I'm not the type of person that says down with dope and up with hope and pumping fists in the air.
No, none of that. We're dealing with reality.
Right. My thing is, if this is the lifestyle, and I've told young people this in front of the principal, if you choose to be a gang member, if you choose to be a drug dealer, if you choose to be a criminal, then you be the absolute best gang member, drug dealing criminal that you can be. Now, that might be an unpopular statement.
But it's real.
Coming from a police officer.
But
okay.
It's real.
But of course, it depends on who it is I'm talking to that I can have this conversation with. And I tell them straight up, look, if you want to be Five Deuce Hoover Crip or Aladdin King or whatever gang that you choose to be blessed in or be put down in, then you do it 110%. Don't half do it. Don't play with it. Don't jump back and forth across the fence. If you're going to do it, do it. I said, but I need you to understand what the consequences are going to be.
Behind that choice.
Now, once I give this information to you, and once I present it to you in a way where I know that you say, I understand, then I've done my job. Now, I'm also going to be here to help, and I've got other resources and other people that I can call upon to help you. So as you're deciding, okay, maybe it's time to turn this thing around a little bit and change some thought processes going on, there are some organizations and entities that are there to perhaps help. But in the meantime, if you choose to go down that road, then you have to understand.
It's a lot go with that. Yes, a lot go with that jump shot.
Yeah, I I've told some middle school kids that really and truly when I say middle school, their street maturity is on a much higher level than just middle school.
Exactly.
I've actually asked some that were very hardcore, they appear to be, that was the perception I guess they wanted to give, that they were hardcore gang members tattooed up and down and nobody could tell them what to do. And I would just ask, are you willing to take another man's life? Are you willing to put a bullet in another human being? And I sit back and I wait on a response. And typically there's a pause, there's some hesitation.
All of that.
Right. And, of course, as a young man, you know, the right thing to say is, oh, yeah, I'll do it, you know. But the reality of it is that you haven't done that. And there is absolutely nothing that suggests that you have to do that.
Exactly.
Because that in itself will be a choice. But if you're going to be a gang member, if you plan on getting rank, if you plan on moving up the ladder, and at one day you want to be the OG, guess what? You may have to do that.
You
got to
put in
work. Are you willing to put in that kind of work? And then I step back, and once again, if there's a pause, there's hesitation.
Right. And if you ain't willing to put in that kind of work, then you need to go get a job at McDonald's, and you just need to tell the brother that you need to go in the intervention program to get the thought pattern up a little higher, you know, because a lot of these cats that's nowadays that I see running in these gangs nowadays, they not thoroughbreds, they not hardcore cats, you know. When you get them by themselves, they soft as butter, you know what I mean? And you've been around a long time, like I said, in the law enforcement thing. When you get them one-on-one back there in the interrogation room, then everybody's want to break down crying now, you know what I mean? But on the block, you that guy, you know? But take the guns and the knives away, and then you humble as humble can get, you know what I mean? And I tell cats all the time, when you go to penitentiary, you know, if you don't know nobody, you know, you can't just come in there talking about, I need me a shank. You know what I mean?
Right.
We don't even know you. You know what I mean? And a lot of these cats fail to realize, too, you know, when you in that lifestyle, you got to know all the ins and outs of that lifestyle. It ain't just you got to know I'm tattooed up, and you got to know everything about that structure of that game, bruh. You know what I mean? Because you got a lot of cats that are going to joint. They only got to go to the county jail.
Right.
They sitting telling everybody about their case. You know what I mean? And like I say, from being a gang member when I was 10 years old into my 20s, if you go to jail or whatever, you don't talk about your case to nobody. You don't even know this cat. You know what I mean?
Right.
And there's so many police officers that go in undercover in the jail system, in the prison system. You feel what I'm saying? And you sitting there talking to a narc that ain't even knowing it's the police you're talking to. So a lot of these cats is so slow in the game, period. You know what I mean? So I have to ask them a lot of questions that you asked them, and, like, once again, they put the pause button on. You know what I mean? And I'm looking at you like, okay, if you that guy, man, I say, why is it that, you know, y'all cats be so quick to tell all your business? You be so quick to tell a female all your business? You be so quick to tell a homeboy all your business? You know what I mean? I say, where I come from, man, in the lifestyle I once used to live, you know, closed mouth is life, you feel me? And open mouth is destruction. You taught that in the game from day one, you know what I mean? And that's why I say the game done flipped over a million times since back in my day, how these cats just start running their mouth so much. So what do you feel about that task right there, how guys just get to running their mouth when they get in their cell and don't know who they're talking to?
Well, you know, a lot of that just goes back to really not having been thoroughly taught the hard rules of that lifestyle. You know, it's real easy nowadays to get on the internet and go to some popular websites, and, you know, tomorrow, if I wasn't a gang member, I can be one. You know, it's as simple as that. There's no real school or nothing I have to go through. I can start my own set. I can say that I'm the OG, and I'm gonna jump in you, and that's it. You know,
right. It ain't nobody been taught the rules, period, Jack.
No, not at all. And so what happens is that you have a very fragmented group of young people.
That's
out
weak.
On the streets, that they think they know what they're doing, but, you know, the truth of it is they don't. And
man,
those are
they
the ones
just caught
that
up.
They get hurt. Right. They either get hurt or they go hurt someone else trying to prove a point, and they find out the harsh realities of life. One of the movies that is one of my most favorite movies is called American History X.
Mm-hmm.
And in American History X, you have this white supremacist skinhead who's out there on the street, and he's being kind of groomed by this older skinhead who's been in and out of prison. So, of course, he can't go out on the streets and say too much because he's going to go back to the penitentiary. Well, he convinces this other kid who's very articulate. Edward Norton is the guy that plays character that I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
and he's this big-time skinhead out on the street, and he ultimately does this hate crime, and he goes to prison, and the harsh realities just sink in that white supremacy and white power and all of that, doesn't necessarily look the same in prison as it did out on the streets.
Oh no, it's a different ball game.
Right, it's much different, and the things that he had to do to survive, and oftentimes I bring that movie up or some examples of that to some of the young men who've never been incarcerated. They've never really been arrested. You know, maybe they got a ticket or they went to the detention center, but nothing really
major.
And those are the ones that I hope never go into the system, because those are the ones that really and truly they're going to be right. You know, they're trying to victimize people out in the free world, but they're the ones that's going to really and truly be victimized.
Right. And you don't know who's
prepared.
Who up in the joint. You know what I mean? Especially if you ain't never been down or did no bit or nothing, you know. You don't know who's who. You don't know whose family might be up there. You know, it's good to have the heat out here on the block or the knife on the block, but it's a whole different realm when you go through that gallery. You know what I mean? It's a whole different set, bruh. You know, it ain't like you finna come up in here and you know, we finna pass you a gun or you finna get you a shank, like I said, right off the top, you know. The rules is totally different in the game up there, bruh. You're an outsider coming in, looking in, bruh, you know. And you're going to have to pay your dues. And that's just the bottom line. And a lot of these young cats, like you say, they don't really think that far. You know what I mean? Because they more followers nowadays than leaders, you know? And
right.
You can get led into doing something totally off the wall, and your man going to make you take that case, you know? And
sure.
Now once your man make you take that case, now you done committed to something that you really, really don't know about, because you ain't never been locked up. You don't know what that world is about. And when you get into that world, That is a whole different realm than it out here on the block, bro. That's a world within itself. It takes on its own term. And that's what a lot of young cats fail to realize. What do you agree or disagree?
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Just last week I was meeting with a young Hispanic young man who he's a little confused. And when I tell you this story real quick, you're going to say he's a lot of confused. But he wants to be promoted within his gang, and one of the older cats in the gang said, hey, if you guys go and take out this other guy that's in our gang, because we're now considering him as a snitch, that if somebody can take him out, then you're going to get promoted. Okay. Now, I'm not exactly sure how the conversation went down, but he processed that to mean, if I go and kill him first, then I'm going to get some rank in this game. And
mm-hmm.
After doing my conversation, I said, but do you understand that, one, you're 15 years of age, and here in the state of Texas, you can be certified as an adult? He didn't really understand that. I said, okay, what that means is that you will not be a juvenile in a juvenile.
When you do that crime, bro.
Right. I said, you will be considered, one, classified as an adult, primarily because the crime was violent, which would have been murder. That's what you're saying that you're going to have to do. And second,
right.
Because you're gang-related.
And
okay,
that carries
so
life
had,
in the state of Texas. Texas got a zero-tolerance law.
Right, so I had to let that soak in for a second. And then I said, but the other thing is that if they don't certify you as an adult, let's just say, you know, they're going to keep you in the juvenile system. First, you have to understand you will be arrested, okay? You will go to jail. It's not a video game. You don't kill somebody and points pop up in the air, okay?
No,
you
no
will
points,
go
bro.
To jail. Right, ain't no points, no reset button, you
none
know, not, you know, none of that. I'll say,
it,
so
it ain't no Monopoly
is,
game. You don't get $200 when you pass go, B.
Right, so what I tried to get him to understand was that the person or persons who actually have given this so-called order or hit, I said, that is a real coward right there. I said, because if they have a problem with that person,
they
would have
went and did it.
Right. I said, so they're utilizing you as a young man, as a child, because
a fall
you don't
guy.
Really understand this. I said, but what I want you to understand, that if they don't certify you, you must understand this. As a juvenile in the state of Texas, the most that they can give you and probably will give you, because you and I having this conversation, and I'm telling you what's going to happen, that as a juvenile in the state of Texas, under what they call the determinate sentencing, juveniles can receive up to 40 years in prison. Okay?
What?
Now, I had to let that soak in for a second.
And that still ain't soaked in.
Right, and I said, now I'm sure your OG told you this, right? And he said, oh, he didn't tell me that. I said, wait a minute, hold up. See, he did not explain to you
the process.
When you take another human being's life as a juvenile that you can receive 40 years. I said, he didn't tell you that?
That's a
40 piece, baby. I said, that's what they're supposed to educate you guys on this kind of stuff. You know, and
at this
point, I'm really kind of playing with him, but I really want him to understand
what goes
the
with
seriousness
that.
Of this. Right.
Yeah. What goes with that chicken dinner you just ordered from Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Exactly. And
you don't get no coleslaw with that.
None at all. And
you don't get no coleslaw, B.
No, you know, and 40, he's 15 now, 40 years. I said, do the math. I said, y'all just got to take an important state test. I'm sure you can do the math on that.
I know you'd be looking at them cats laughing, man. Them be some dumb gang members, don't they?
But, you know, I want to see the wheel start to turn because I see that the wheel is moving. I want to see it moving because ultimately if this is the decision that you have made, or are going to make, you really and truly need to understand what's going to happen.
Yeah, no McDonald's. No McDonald's, B.
None at all. And I told him, I said, you know, I'm not sure if your parents are familiar with your gang and your involvement. I said, but, you know, I'm going to have a conversation with them as well and explain some things. I said, because one of the things that you're probably not thinking about right now is how your actions
will change your life
family.
Forever.
Right, and your family. I said, you've never met as many moms as I have met and watched them cry and weep over their sons
being dead
in prison or dead. And he, once again, he's just looking at me because he's still a child. And even though
no
I
understanding
know,
there.
Right, I'm still I'm talking to a child. I'm not talking to some hardcore, you know, been to the penitentiary type of guy. I'm talking to
a child. Yeah, you're talking to.
And he's trying to, he's hearing what I'm saying, but he's never heard this before, so he's not quite sure if I'm lying to him, if I'm telling him the truth. You know,
but I
want to
be accepted, man, in this gang, man. I really want to be accepted. That's he's only screaming that to you. I really want to be accepted. But you breaking the terms down to him that his own gang ain't broke down to him, you know?
Right.
If you get caught, you know what I mean, we can't just talk about the non-caught part. We got to give you the ins and the outs if you get caught. You feel me? And 9 times out of 10, you're going to get caught. So now, this is the layout. When you get busted, don't tell on none of us. You go ahead and lay it down for your 40-piece. You feel me? And any real cats, we're going to keep something on your books, you know. That don't come to the table at all because, number one, we ain't finna keep nothing on your books. When you go and lay it down, you just out of our hair, and we don't even know you no more. You know what I mean? So he didn't explain none of that crucial part to the young man, you know. And, that young man need to really take a cold look at life. And, you really need to continue working with him and educating his mind because his mind is not even functioning on the proper level right now. You know what I mean? So I got to give you big ups for even taking the time out to intervene with this young man to let him know the choice you're about to make, brother, will destroy your life for the rest of your life.
But you know what's really sad is that this is one of so many out there that think exactly the same way that he thinks.
Yes.
And I really believe that the more people that really understand or take the time to understand the subculture of gangs and gang violence and youth violence and how it affects our community, the more people that can get involved. And are passionate. I don't mean get involved just because of some grant money that somebody want to throw at you, but really and truly get involved
to help the people.
Then we will see a difference, perhaps within the upcoming generation or two. I said, but up until that point, we are obligated, and that's just me. And I know that a lot of my colleagues, perhaps throughout the country, may agree or disagree. But for me, I have an obligation. One, because I am a father, and I have teenagers as well. And you know, when I look at this generation of young people, I want them to succeed. I don't want to see our prisons full of us. I don't want to see our rehab centers full of us. I don't want to see our streets full of us because we're not making solid
progress.
Right. I want to see. And so, you know, I get to change hats, you know, about 4 or 5 o'clock every day, and then I get to walk into the college, and then I become Dr. Sabir instead of Officer Sabir.
My man.
And it becomes a great feeling for me because I get to, like I said, not only take on a different hat, but I get to take on somewhat of a different personality, and I become the educator in a different atmosphere and different environment.
Right. And not the one that's going to put the handcuffs on you just yet.
Right.
You know, right
exactly.
Now I'm just the educator. But the handcuffs,
right.
We're going to put them on the shelf for a minute. You know what I mean?
Right.
Until
exactly.
Later on today. But right
exactly.
Now, I'm not him. I'm still
right.
Him, but I'm not him right now, you know,
yeah.
Unless you bring that out of me while we in class. But let me be the doctor right now, and we're
yeah.
Going to leave the officer. We're going to leave him sitting outside for a minute. But we still together.
Mm-hmm. And I really try to separate the two because there are some different needs inside that academic classroom that perhaps I don't share or I'm not going to extend when I'm talking to a gang member. There are some different needs and different wants, and it's just a total different atmosphere. But I can go back and forth when I need to.
Right.
It's just that in the classroom, I'm speaking to adults who want to be there, who are wanting to take on a higher level of education, versus the 14 or 15 year old gang member that can't spell the word college, let alone. I mean, seriously, and I'm not even playing with that. I say, how many of you guys? I used to do that. I stopped doing it because it hurt my feelings so bad. I used to walk into a room, how many of you guys going to college? And out of 25 people, I mean, literally, you would hear the crickets in the room.
Nobody raised their hand.
Nobody raising a hand because college
is far away.
Is such a foreign term.
Right.
They're trying to make it through the semester. They don't even know if they're going to make it to the next grade.
Right.
You know?
And you screaming college.
I'm screaming college, so I stopped doing that because it was hurting my feelings. Seriously, it was
right.
Really hurting my feelings that, but I would go, and this is not really, well, it is. It is a statement on the racial differences that we do have within our country.
And that's going
to
still be.
I could go to a predominantly white community, predominantly white school, and I could ask that same question, and out of 20 people, about 15 of them
hands up in the air.
Their hands up in the air, and the other five
it's debate.
That didn't raise their hand. Right. It's not that they're not going to college.
They debating right now.
They debating which college they
exactly.
Going to.
Exactly. But the other homies in the hood.
Yeah,
the other homies in the hood. They don't even know how to spell college, so you got to deal with them on a whole different page. It's like, you know, it's like teaching a baby how to walk, you know what I mean? So that's the atmosphere that you had to say, wow, you know, I can't say, hey, how many of you going to college? So we have to take our baby steps with this, you know, class over here to get you to the point where you can say, wow, you know, Doc, I want to go to college. You know what I mean? You're going to come to me and say that. But right now, we can't ask you that question because your mind is 50,000 miles away from that door. You know? So, yeah.
Usually that conversation comes, if I get the opportunity perhaps to meet with that group or meet with that individual, you know, on several different occasions, then the college conversation typically will come up, because that means that I've been able to kind of break down or at least penetrate a few little defense shields that they may have up, and so we can take our conversation somewhere else, just once again to try to get some wheels
turned
so they can start thinking that there is life beyond the seventh grade. There is life beyond the high school or the two-square-mile community that you live in.
Right.
There is something much greater out there. One, you have to hear what I'm saying. You have to believe it, and you have to internalize that in order for you to move forward. Because I can give the greatest speech in the world, but it's not until you internalize that information
that it's going to be an
effect. You will see progress. Exactly.
Right. And it's better. It's more than being on that corner on that liquor store all day long and thinking I don't see you every time the patrol car pull around.
Right.
You know,
so
and that's what a lot of the cats.
How do you educate the parents, I guess, so that the parents can educate the kids, you know, on different things in life?
Well,
in the last week, we talked a little bit about parenting, and it's just, I was saying last week that parents are punished, and when they get divorced, they have to go to parenting classes. So it's more like a punishment instead of, when a young couple gets married, they need to go to a parenting class so that they'll know a little bit better how to raise a child.
Right.
So things are kind of backwards. So what would you say that, I mean, how can we educate parents better to be able to raise their kids and teach them the different choices that they have?
Well, you know, one of the things with parenting is that parenting is an institution, but not everybody is going to be a member of that institution, which simply means that the concept of parenting, just like the concept of schooling and the concept of going to work, those are all institutions. But because I have fathered a child or two doesn't mean that I know what a parent is supposed to do.
Right.
And so what has to take place is that those that have chosen to be parents, that they have to understand that there are certain tools, as they say, tools on the tool belt that they have to have. Because you have children that you're raising, you have to understand that there are many forces and a lot of things. There are a lot of things, a lot of forces out there in society that work against what you're trying to accomplish as a parent. But if you don't have the skills or some tools on your belt, then those forces will suck your child dry. They will suck your community dry. They will suck your school dry. Everything will just be dry as a desert. So in speaking to parents, oftentimes I have to kind of find out, well, what's their background? Where are they coming from? What tools do they have on their belt? Because if I'm trying to talk to a parent about Johnny being in a gang and mom's got all of her previous boyfriend's names tattooed on her neck, and she's throwing up gang signs, and she's walking into the room herself, and she's just, it's just not of the type of she's not on the level that I would think that another adult would need to be on in order for us to progress with helping her child, then that means I got to step back a little bit, and I can't have the same conversation that I would probably have with someone else that has a different level of maturity. So understanding what our parents do go through and what their backgrounds are. And it's not stereotyping the mom that has the tattoo or the young man who's the father with the tattoos, but what happens is that the children see and they become a product of what they can process. And if what they're processing is that immediate environment, and everyone talks the same, everyone looks the same, everyone behaves the same, no one seems to progress or do anything better for themselves, then it becomes a very, very difficult task to, one, help that child, but also help the parent and help them understand where they can, how they can take this to another level. So what happens at the end of the day is that oftentimes I find myself now having to refer them to other agencies and other groups that perhaps may be able to deal with them on their
level.
They
page, yeah. Because it's hard to tell a parent something about little Johnny, like you said, when the parent's smoking weed and drinking with little Johnny all day. That's a whole different page you're dealing
right.
with now. You know,
right.
it ain't the typical parent that we had growing up where, you know, you act up in school, mama on her way up there to bring the belt or the switch. You got that automatic, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Nowadays, you know what I mean, mom's coming up there tripping and everything else and knowing little Johnny done did this, you feel me? She up in there tripping and cussing and hooping and hollering. So, yeah,
right.
we dealing with a whole different realm of the game now, you know. With some of these young parents, you know, like I refer all the time, these a lot of these 80 kids, man, we're dealing with now, you know?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
a lot of their parents was on drugs. A lot of their parents, you know, can't wait to say, hey, don't forget to bring me that 40-ounce when you come off the block or bring me a sack of weed or whatever, you know?
Right,
we
right.
couldn't say that to our mama back in them days, man. You got your teeth knocked out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, but nowadays, don't forget to bring mama that 40 or bring mama a sack.
Right. Yeah.
So mama ain't trying to hear nothing that the police officer talking about or the intervention man. You know, mama tripping all out in the open and in the public now, you know, loud as ever.
Exactly.
So we
I think one of the things that has helped our community, I think, become a better community is that there have been more agencies to come on board, I would say, since the early 90s. And that's pretty much when a lot of this really, really exploded in our city and I think in a lot of cities around the country that now we have more organizations like your Boys and Girls Club, your Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Here we have a program called the Coming Up Program, and it is the only gang intervention program really within the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and it's a very unique program within the Boys and Girls Club. There are so many other organizations out there, so to say that the police, to task the police with addressing gang violence, well, you can task them. But there will never be any real success with that because it has to be addressed from a holistic standpoint. If you can't get the churches, you got to get the churches. It really there's no can't when you're looking at trying to aggressively address these issues. You have to involve your churches, your schools, your nonprofits, you know, your parents. You have to involve everybody in this whole process. Otherwise, we all lose.
Exactly.
I think your smaller communities and your large communities that have figured out without it being a Democratic or a Republican issue, those that can put their political views to the wayside and say this is a human issue here that we're dealing with, when they can bring all those entities together and they can work and have great partnerships and continue to network year after year after year, you see some success stories and you see that your community becomes a much safer community in the long haul because it's an investment. And a lot of people don't understand the investment doesn't necessarily have to be financial.
It just have to be people putting in work to make the situation work, you know, and that's just time. You know, it's about time, and it's about doing what needs to be done. And that's exactly what me and my wife say. You know, it ain't about the money all the time. It's about communicating with these children. It's about communicating with the parents. It's about communicating with people within your community. And like you said, the churches and a lot of the resources that we have to pull together. Because a lot of children don't want to be gang members. A lot of children don't want to sell drugs, you know. You got your ones that want to be Al Capone, you know. You got your ones that want to be John Gotti. You got them out there. But at the same time, everybody don't want to be that, you know. They follow us, so they want to be accepted in some things, but they jumping off the wrong bridge to be accepted in. So we must put the safety net up under there just to let them know you can make a change and you can make a difference in your life if you choose. Once again, we back to that choice, you know. Now, if you make the right choice, you're going to win. If you make the wrong choice, I mean, hey, sorry to say, but, hey, we got two things for you, either the gate or death. And that's just the right. Bottom line. Ain't no in-between in that. You agree?
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I mean, you use a similar example, you know, telling kids, hey, you know, in the state of Texas, we're proud of a couple things. One is the amount of land that we have and the number of prisons that we build. And we in Texas, they do things bigger and better. And so that is a very arrogant statement, but
it's real talk.
It's very factual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they rooms stay for rent. It stay for rent. You don't never see no sign up there saying we don't got no space. Mm. You know, right. So don't get it twisted that you think you're gonna do something and you're gonna say, oh, well, they ain't got no space for me. No, brother. They got plenty space, and if they ain't got plenty of them, you be on top of each other. So don't get it misunderstood that the spot is empty, you know.
There's plenty money to keep you incarcerated. You know, we spend in Texas roughly about $50,000 per year per inmate. But yet we're
keep
only
you
gonna
chilling.
Spend about right, but we're only gonna spend about $8,000 to keep you in public school now. So we're going to put about $8,000 to educate you, but we're going to spend $50,000 to incarcerate you.
And keep you on ice.
So where do you think as a society we are more apt to invest in you?
Exactly, you know. Hey, let me ask you something, too. Do they still got the law? Well, I'm quite sure they do. Do they still got that law in Texas? If you get caught with a joint in your car, you can do up to 5 or 10 years?
No, what they have is, well, like I said, in Texas they have what they call mandatory minimums. They don't have the three strikes like they do in California. We don't have that. What they have done, and I know what you're referring to, what they have done is somewhat changed many of the drug laws that are
okay.
on the books a little bit, but that's not one that would get you any sufficient amount of time, not for a joint, but
okay.
You know, who knows? You know, this time next year that there might be a different law in the books.
Right, because I remember a homeboy of mine that was coming through Amarillo, Texas. This was back in the days, in the 80s, you know, and he ended up getting 5 years down there in Texas for joining the car.
Right.
You know, so I was telling people, boy, you know, coming through Texas ain't no joke, baby. So when you come through there, you better make sure you squeaky clean.
Exactly.
Because it ain't, you know, the game will get twisted, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd be definitely making them aware of different states because, you know, like I tell everybody, you got to know these laws, man, when you're going through these different states and traveling through these different states because you might stay in New York and know their law, but if you coming through some other state, you got to know their law too, bro, if you out here doing any kind of wrong, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
and
the best thing
is
don't do any of it and you don't get in trouble.
Exactly.
But you got to know what you know if you're out there, like you said, making that bad choice. Because it's all a choice. Okay, ain't nobody got no gun in your head telling you to do nothing. This is a choice you making to do.
Yeah.
You know?
You're right.
But, yeah, we have had a great, great show tonight. And we thanking our guests tonight for coming on. And we also thanking all the listeners for listening tonight. And we hope that the show tonight enlighten you all on a lot of different issues and a lot of different pages to parents, to community leaders, to churches, to people all across the nation. We hope you got some out of this message tonight, because Doc Show put it on the table, and we just hope you sucked it in, and you can go back and tell your children, tell your neighbor that we must all unite together, because that's what keeps the atmosphere strong. You know, take a village to raise a child, like they said in the old days, and start telling your kid at 1, 2, and 3 years old. Don't wait till little Johnny or little Susie get 14 or 15, because now you on a whole different talk table from that point. Start at a very young age. And we want to give you your last say-so, Doc, and any shout-outs you need to give and any last advice.
I just want to really thank you guys for, one, having me and doing what you do. I wasn't as familiar with your show and your website about a week or so ago, and I've been very pleased with the content and the material that I've seen and heard, and I just I only wish that we live in the same city that we could work a little more closer.
We can still network, Doc, you know what I mean? Because anytime you need me to come down that way and you can put it together, just let my wife know, and we'd be on down there, you know. And like I said, the streets don't love you back. We definitely are iterating that constantly to these kids, because the streets will never love you back.
All right.
That's great.
Any last announcements? Babe?
I just want to say congratulations to all the 2010 graduates from high school, college, you know, whatever you're graduating from. We congratulate you. Awesome job. And we'd like to thank all the listeners for listening tonight, and thank Dr. Sabir for joining us. And we definitely, you know, want to stay connected with you. And, you know, you can join our website as a member, and you'll always get our notices and know that what we're up to. I want to let you know that next week Dr. Patty Searson is going to be on. She's an author and a doctor out in New York. She talks with women and girls who have been raped, who've had gone through incest and different kinds of sexual abuse. And she's written a book called Invisible Girls and has a program that actually helps girls work through this and then gives them scholarships to go on to be able to learn and go to school and do other things to get, you know, help them get past and change their life. So it'll be an interesting show, and join us, you know, next Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific time, 11:30 Eastern time. And, you know, just once again, thank everybody for your support. And remember, the streets don't let you back.
You got a book out too, right, Doc?
No, that's in the works.
Oh, okay then. I was going to say, let them know about your book too. Yeah, well, we're going to definitely get you a copy of my book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, and that can be part of your intervention program down there in Fort Worth area, where the youth can read that book as well, you know. And it'll teach them a lot of things, you know, where I went wrong and a lot of my homies went wrong, you know. They're still doing life in the federal and state prison, so... it's a tool guide to let you know once again that if you make that wrong choice, it's a lot of consequences to go with that choice, bro, you know. And it's just not no popcorn and candy we finna give you and tell you to have a nice day at the, you know, the lodge spot, you know.
Yes.
So we want to thank you again, and God bless you and your family. And like I said, the wife said go ahead and join the movement page, and we'll be sending you information, updates every week. And I have a new book coming out too as well real soon called Never Hit a Woman, so that book will be out real soon as well. And my wife have a book coming out about gang intervention as well, so be on the lookout for both of our two new books coming.
All right, sounds good.
Okay.
All right, tonight, have a great night now.
We're
all right,
go
y'all take care.
All right.
We're going to go out with the song Guide and Protect Us by Rising Sun out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging that two-edged sword, I'm fighting between. justice or nothing can hurt me, even when I pass away. My legacy lives on through my seed and my working, every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. The first one I call every day when I wake and pray. Yeah, the one who is there when no one has a care, I say. Lord, you strengthen my soul when my mind wants to go astray. Yeah, and lift me up high when I fall and my ground gives way. Lord, how precious your love and your grace and your counting days. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, now I shall receive. Yeah, with all of my strength I will find bliss in iron fist. Lord, the freedoms of hate and the sea today don't exist. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me, even when I pass away. My legacy lives on through my seed and my working, every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. With enemies close all around, I will call your name. Yeah, and slaughter the weak, you quickly with no thought or shame. Lord, for my heart is firm in your hands, so I've no disgrace. No, I'll hail up your name every day with a smiling face. Boy, I never can give enough praise to your tenderness. Lord, to be in your infinite grace is my happiness. Yeah, no matter the time or the place, you're a miracle. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, so I shall resist. Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy, swinging that two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me, even when I pass away. My legacy lives on through my seed and my working, every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. Yeah, we tried the long rocky road. The Buffalo soldier fights the power freedom war. The last we step on the throne, the conquering disciples burn your congregation. Yeah, collect your security. We build a better nation, time besides the unity. Say nothing and fight, nothing and war. But brotherly love can destroy oppression. If we come together, we can conquer all our foes. Live victory eternally. But if we keep on murdering, see so much petty things, we're crumbling our destiny. But we were meant to rule upon the earth and multiply creativity and love, so I will always try to show love and respect until I die. And so I will humble and pray. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy, swinging that two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me, even when I pass away. My legacy lives on through my seed and my working, every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.